We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Wow. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here. I'm talking about Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. A couple of last texts on that go-round we just had a moment ago. Lee from Huntsville said, God calls us to live in the world but not be of the world. Jesus said it best, for what does it benefit a man to gain the whole world with all its pleasures and forfeit his soul? Words still so relevant 2,000 years later. Yes, they are indeed, my friend. They are. And it's a cautionary statement to people who get so wrapped up in things of the world they lose who they are. Jeff from Indiana says, you know, Phil, even though a lot of these politicians stay in their positions forever, some of them way past mental capacities like old Joe. What's even more sad is voters that can't see or don't pay enough attention to what's going on just to pull a familiar name, even though everything they do is detrimental to the country. Indeed, we do bear some responsibility as voters. I will say real quickly, I just double-checked the news, and I'm sitting here looking at two stories. Now, this is not part of my dippers. I'm chasing a rabbit. One of our texters a moment ago, I think it was JoJo who texted in from Coleman and said, you know, just pointing out about the thing about the Russian warships. Yeah, you can go look at foxnews.com right now. And there's the top story. Putin's fleet of warships is in Cuba in a direct warning to President Biden, experts say. And I agree. I think it's a flex. I think Putin is trying to show that he is not going to be deterred and that he believes that he is still a strong force and he's opposing the United States. I don't think this means a war footing, but I think it means an ominous presence in our own hemisphere, close to our own waters, for no other purpose except to just flex. And I believe that that's because he smells weakness in the Biden administration. And then the other story that I was going to mention is Hezbollah is launching massive rocket attacks on Israel amid what the story here calls mounting tensions. Not Hamas, Hezbollah. So Hezbollah is in the north in Lebanon. And they're at war with Hamas to their west in the Gaza Strip. But directly north of them is the other Iran proxy called Hezbollah that has no telling how many missiles stockpiled. And they've been sort of staying out of it. Just poking a few times, but not really anything big. But apparently there's a massive missile attack going on from Hezbollah, and that would be a major escalation if a new front had to open up in the north. We'll keep an eye on that. That's the world in which we live with Joe Biden as president right now, by the way. All right, let me jump on this first dipper. I'm calling this culture clashes. I'm going to try and run the gamut of this one during this first half hour here, well, with what I got left of it. But the thing is this. It's amazing when you look at, okay, somebody will say something in an official capacity over here, and somebody will do just the opposite over there. Now, some of that is because, granted, we have, like, for instance, the 10th Amendment gives individual states the rights to make their own laws to some degree, unless they're superseded by federal law, meaning that you can have something happen in Alabama that's not going to happen in California and vice versa. But there's also times when you look at it and realize that is just a pure clash of cultures. That's not just a nuance of the laws. It's not just a policy position. That's a true cultural shift from one group talking about this and then, bam, to another. Here's an example. Story that I pulled off townhall.com, Dateline 2 days ago. The American College of Pediatricians just issued a statement calling upon medical professionals to stop providing the so-called gender-affirming care for children. Good for them. The American College of Physicians, and they include in their ranks people like nurses, psychotherapists, behavioral health clinicians, other health professionals, scientists, researchers, public health and policy professionals in the health environment. They say, we have serious concerns about the physical and mental health effects of the current protocols being promoted for the care of children and adolescents in the United States who express discomfort with their biological sex. And it says, quote, they should not be based upon an individual's thoughts and feelings. They also point out very clearly that the evidence is mounting, that gender dysphoria is something that is typically grown out of, and that the vast majority of it struggles from or is a struggle with dysfunctional or misinterpreted relational dynamics, and not meaning bad relationships and bad experiences, maybe even abuse, drives them to gender dysphoria. They point out in here also, England this year sent shockwaves around the world when the National Health Service in England said no longer would they allow for puberty blockers to be prescribed to children. And then came back later and said they're actually going to go ahead and review all of the so-called transgender treatments for children. Finland, one of their top pediatric experts, recently came out and said that 4 out of 5 children in a study believe their biological sex is not aligned with their gender identity, eventually grows out of it in their teenage years. All this to say, we still have the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics in the opposite direction, doing just the opposite. So meanwhile, you've got the American College of Pediatricians coming out with a bold statement. You've got Finland as a nation's health. You got Great Britain, the National Health Service. And then, meanwhile, culture clash, right down the road, Newsweek has an article. Same day, the exact same day that came out about the American College of Pediatricians issuing their statement. Bam! We get a thing from Newsweek. Newsweek. A Boston appeals court on Sunday upheld the decision for a middle schooler to be stopped from wearing a shirt that said there are only 2 genders. So, this kid in March of 23 last year, his name's Liam Morrison. He's a 7th grader at Nichols Middle School. They had a pride day. So the next day he came in wearing a shirt that says there are only 2 genders. He was told he couldn't wear the shirt, had to take it off. So a month later he came back with another shirt that said there are censored genders. The kid, I feel certain there was a parent behind some of this, but the bottom line is the kid was pretty brassy. But he was told he couldn't wear that shirt either because it targeted non-binary students. So I've got over here, I've got medical professionals in a big way calling for all of this transgenderism and the treatments for it to stop. Meanwhile, I've got over here in the education environment, kids being told they can't wear a shirt that says there's 2 genders, while I know for a fact they probably got to have a biology textbook somewhere in that school that says there are. Anyway, it led to a lawsuit. Alliance Defending Freedom got involved. And the U.S. district judge ruled in favor of the school, so the kid couldn't wear the shirt. So it got appealed. And we just found out the U.S. Court of Appeals for the First Circuit in Boston came back and said, nope, school's okay with saying you can't wear that shirt. Really? Alliance Defending Freedom condemned it, saying this is a violation of free speech rights, and they intend to fight it. All said and done, that's a total culture clash. On the one hand, you've got experts in the industry of medicine calling on all of this to stop. At the same time, you've got schools teaching kids that this shouldn't stop. This is the way things are. It's absolutely a cultural dichotomy. I mean, it's like disparate treatment. No matter where you look, it's one thing here, another thing over there. How about this one? Story that I'll advance later if I can get all the way to Dipper 3. Nancy Pelosi. Well, well, well. Breitbart has an article that came out on the 10th. There's a video, and I've seen it. She's in a car. She's been evacuated from the Capitol on January 6th because of the insurrection. Now, granted, I don't fuss about her being evacuated because there was an angry crowd outside. Didn't know what was going to happen. But still, at the time she was being evacuated, her daughter was with her, Alexandra Pelosi. What does Alexandra Pelosi do? She's a documentarian. Do what? Yep. She was filming every moment for a documentary. Funny how that worked out. Huh. At the same time, as they're being evacuated, in the car, daughter is filming mom while mom is admitting that she did not do anything to help with security and that she felt responsible. In the video, despite all of the rhetoric we've heard since then, blaming Donald Trump for not providing National Guard support when he offered it days beforehand. In the video, Pelosi is shown lamenting, "We have responsibility. We didn't have any accountability for what was going on there. We should have. Why weren't the National Guard there to begin with? I take responsibility for not having the National Guard to prepare." Really? That's what she said back then? Well, I got news. This video should have been produced to the January 6th committee. Shouldn't it? I mean, when they were reviewing all the things that Trump did badly, Didn't they need this video that said that the Speaker of the House was admitting some responsibility? Oh, no, no, that's right. Speaker of the House is the one who appointed them to their position on the committee. Oh, that's right. And Alexander Pelosi and Nancy Pelosi never gave this video to the January 6th committee. Funny how that worked out. Meanwhile, it was discovered by HBO and recently turned over to Politico, who decided to go with it. On the other hand, January 6th is so bad. January 6th was such an awful event. January 6th was the downfall of society. It was a near insurrection. It was evident that Trump incited a riot. And our own Mo Brooks, just invoking terror. Come on. However, apparently, if you're a pro-Palestinian protester, you can get away with murder. Close to, not quite. Thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters surrounded the White House on Saturday afternoon. This story on National Review, the day before the Pelosi video comes out, we have this story. And it points out that there was graffiti and rioting, assaulting police officers, tearing up park infrastructure, graffiti all over park monuments, calling upon the, for death to Biden. One protester was actually carrying around what looked like a bloody head of Biden. They were talking about the guillotine being necessary. Police said they tried to arrest one person who was climbing up on a statue, but the crowd intervened. So the police deployed pepper spray. The person got away, though. They didn't arrest anybody. In fact, if you look back on the way things were in 2020 with BLM, you'll realize no one's ever going to get arrested. And so what am I saying here? What I'm saying is they will scream, "But Trump," on everything. But when somebody on their side of the aisle is committing similar acts, there is no claims, that there's no effort. There's no one even out there. And then you wonder why no one trusts the Democrats when it comes to upholding constitutional order. My point in this is the cultural clash is that Nancy Pelosi thought that it was so necessary to go get Trump that she was willing to fabricate a story that is ruined people's lives, by the way, hide the video of herself accepting responsibility because she didn't want that getting out because it defeated her narrative. At the same time, you got people right outside the White House rioting and defacing U.S. property, not a single arrest, because nobody cares on the Democrat side. Go take a break right now. We'll take that break. I'll come right back, and I'll tell you a little bit more about some of these cultural clashes. Like, is it okay for Byron Donalds to talk about how things were back under Jim Crow? He's a black man. Why can't he say it? But then they can say whatever they want to about Jews. Oh, did I go there? Yes, I did. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, just making common sense like a superpower. I'm doing this first dipper, and I'll finish it up during this segment, I believe. But this first dipper is called Culture Clashes. It's amazing when you see that on one hand, something will be said or enacted or acted upon or promoted, and yet you find the exact opposite right down the road. And it is not just a matter of policy. It's a true clash of culture sometimes. And sometimes it's a true act of hypocrisy if you get down to it. Like, for instance, CNN has a story. It came out about a week ago. So Florida Representative Byron Donalds, who, by the way, is on the short list apparently for being a running mate for Trump, I love Byron Donalds. The guy is sharp as a tack, very conservative, a black Republican. Anyway, he made some comments the other day. And you can't say stuff like, who are you to say things like this? He made the comment as they were talking about issues related to black culture in America during an interview with the Philadelphia Inquirer, I believe it was, that back during Jim Crow, his words were, back during Jim Crow laws days, the black family was more together. He said during Jim Crow, more black people were not just conservative, because black people have always been conservative-minded, but more black people voted conservatively. He said that all ended due to a culture of dependence that was created by the federal government's welfare system in the 1950s. He said, you go down that road, and now we are where we are. Well, nobody's taking none of the liberals are taking into account what he just said. He was talking about during the era when there were oppressive laws but that there was still a level of independence and conservative thought and family orientation in the black community that is not there now. Because even though it was Jim Crow, at the very least, what he was saying was there was a different culture. And then, boom, the welfare system kicked in, and it did nothing but rob the black community in many places, especially in the urban environments, of their ability to be self-sufficient. That's what he was saying. CNN is all over it. I mean, like, he got ripped by Al Sharpton. He got ripped by Hakeem Jeffries. Hakeem Jeffries says, "That's an outlandish, outrageous, and out-of-pocket observation. We were not better off when a young boy named Emmett Till could be brutally murdered without consequence because of Jim Crow." And did he say anything about that? No. In fact, in a second interview, he came back to CNN. He said, "I was not talking about anything in terms of nostalgia, like wanting it to go back to that." He said, "I was talking about time periods, and I was framing the time period." Now, a black man himself saying what he said, you would think that would not draw the ire of the libs. Because, I don't know, does he maybe have the street cred to say it? I would think so. But yet, what the liberals won't get in the way of is from the river to the sea. So don't you dare say that anything good happened during an era when we had Jim Crow laws. Don't you even, I don't care if you're a black man, don't you dare. But you've got to chant from river to the sea, which means wiping out the Jews in Israel. Okay, that's fine, go right ahead. What? Do what? So they could care less when another demographic, liberals could care less when another demographic is trounced upon, protested, and people want to call for their death. But how dare a black conservative man mention Jim Crow without talking about lynchings and things? He was using it as a frame of reference, but no, you can't do that. You can't even go there. In the meantime, Times of Israel, story that came out on November 8th, shows Representative, oh, I'm sorry, November 8th of last year, yeah, 2023, Representative Rashida Tlaib, herself being Palestinian, a member of Congress, endorsing genocide by allowing Israel to continue dismantling the terrorist organization. She called upon President Biden to quit endorsing genocide. But then she got caught in the whole chant as she joined a chorus of others by yelling, "From the river to the sea." Well, the slogan, "From the river to the sea," what's between the river and the sea? What's between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea? Israel. The only way you can say "from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free" is to remove Israel completely from the mix. And that's what she's calling for. Liberals didn't have a thing to say about it. There were some who called her out, but for the most part, her leadership did not want to deal with it. She was censored. Republicans had to lead the censorship. Shouldn't ought to be that way, but it's a culture clash. And then lastly, I'll just point out a couple of things, and I like the fact that Alabama's in the mix on this one. I got less than a minute, so I'll just tell you. California, just last year, mandated the collection and release of diversity data from venture capital firms because they're all in on DEI, and they want to stoke up the fires. Meanwhile, a couple months later in Alabama, Governor Kay Ivey signed a bill banning DEI. Love that. All right. Y'all stay tuned. I got a pretty interesting section we're going to go through in a minute. We'll be right back.